Hey everyone, this is a Barclay Damon Live broadcast of the CyberSIP, practical talk about cybersecurity. I'm your host, Kevin Sapansky. Let's talk.
Welcome back. We are here with Professor Sui Liu of the State University of New York at Buffalo. He is a professor in the Department of Computer Science and Engineering. Professor Liu was on earlier to talk to us about some of the history and benefits of AI, and today he is back and we will talk about some of its downsides. How can AI go wrong? Before we get to one of the chief ways, and really one of your central areas of expertise, Sui, deepfakes, I want to ask you a general question, which is, why do you think that in society today, in media today, there is such a disparity between those who think nothing of AI, understand that we're using it in our phones and other technology today, and on the other extreme, individuals who are literally talking about the existential threats of this technology, how we could lose our entire civilization? Why are these two poles sort of pointing and arguing with each other now?
Well, I guess, you know, this is like many complicated issues. You become more articulated when you push something to the extreme. I think that the reality is we're neither like, you know, on the brim of total collapse of society, or, you know, just as good old days, you know, nothing gonna happen. It's somewhere there. There are some fundamental changes, but the change come in a way that is gradual and somehow, you know, subconsciously in many cases. But I think, you know, people, many of the argument that come from that, you know, to make these points clearer, we need to give the extreme, you know, push them to the extreme. Then we will see where we are. So I kind of like the discussion because, I mean, this is what it should be in a healthy democratic society, that we talk about the implications. I think neither, but on the other hand, you know, if we base our decision on either of the extremes, it will not be useful. You know, we cannot totally ignore the development of AI, but we cannot be kind of so concerned that we don't want to use it at all. It's a combination. It's a trade-off. It needs somewhere in between.
Well, thank you for that. And I think that makes perfect sense to me. We were having similar conversations, I think, about nuclear energy, which may have gotten off to a rather alarming start in the 20th century, but has evolved to be entirely useful. So let's switch to the chief subject that I wanted to get to you today, and that is deepfakes. Tell us briefly about your background, because I think you are the leading expert in the field. And then give us a definition. When we talk about deepfake, what is it?
Okay. So a little bit about me. So I was not born in the US. I was born in China. I came to the US in 2001 to pursue my PhD study. And I was just, you know, fortunate to study with Professor Hanif Reid, who is the pioneer and the leading scientist in this field called the media forensics. So when I started working with my advisor 22 years ago, to be exact, it was a infant research area, because back then, you know, internet is a new thing. We just started to use email, and Photoshop is a shiny new thing, you know, new kid on the block. And people just start to realize, oh, we can manipulate images with computers with such ease using a tool like Photoshop. So many times, you know, the fact that we can manipulate media for that at the time only digital images is still something like a new phenomenon. And people mostly feel about the curiosity, you know, curious part of it, than the potential harm. So Hanif was one of the first set of researchers who realized there are, you know, harmful, sad effects of this technology development. So he gave a talk at the graduate fair. First year grad students will, meet with faculties. And I was immediately fascinated with this idea because I've never thought about, developing an algorithm and do something really cool, really fun, as a, if you're a programmer. It turns out that it can be something harmful. And so I started working on that, and that's my PhD thesis. And ever since I become a faculty member, I'm focusing in that area. And my research actually cover a whole wide range of grounds. I study, computer science, developing algorithms, AI, machine learning, but I also have a strong mathematical background. So all this, I would like to put them in the mathematical models to study them and turn them into computer code to run run those models, to run those algorithms. I was also fortunate to train under a neuroscientist when I was a postdoc. So I also understand the side of human vision, and that's very helpful because it gave me the perspective why, we fall for certain media manipulations. And that's because, our biological brain was not wired that way to recognize those manipulations. Mm-hmm. And then later I started to work with social psychologists and, people working in education. I started to understand the social aspects, more of the social aspects of manipulating media. So my work has been mostly, go under the behind the scene because, media forensics was never a big topic to the public or even to the research community until in the middle of 2016, when deepfakes suddenly becomes a phenomenon. AI algorithms, deepfakes, put very simply, are just falsified or manipulated media. Here we're talking about images, videos, voices, and also text, and the combination of them that are created with the help or directly using computer algorithms and particularly artificial intelligence algorithms. So that suddenly put our research area into the front row. People all want to know, can we tell what is real and what is fake using algorithms? Because they become so realistic.
So Sway, can you give us a good example of what a deepfake is? What do they look like?
Well, deepfakes have many different forms. For instance, there are images created by AI algorithms that belongs to nobody. So you see faces of AI generated faces belongs to
and
nobody.
Not real. It's not me. It's not you. It's just
no. It's fake. And people use this synthetic faces on their social accounts, fake social accounts as profile images. There are also voices. I mean, you pick up a phone and you hear somebody's voice. Maybe it's your friend, your family member, but they're not really, they're the real person. It's created again by AI algorithms. And there are also videos. I think there are plenty of them online. There's a deepfake video of Vladimir Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, asking the Ukrainian citizen to put down their weapon and surrender to the Russian. Fake, right? And there's a fake Tom Cruise, a series of deepfake videos of Tom Cruise, right? So there are many different forms. And now ChatGPT can create very believable news stories. Those are, again, a form of deepfake. So, if you think about this, every type of media or their combination can be created using algorithms.
So we tell, and I just did a podcast episode about this earlier this year, I think, we tell people how to recognize threat actors' phony emails. We say, look for language differences or generic terms or punctuation errors, grammatical errors. And what I'm hearing you say is deepfakes can be used to eliminate all of that. So what used to be the signs or indicators of fraud may no longer appear, or in some instances may not appear. So how can we identify a deep fake if it's specifically designed not to be detected?
Well, there are actually a couple of ways. I want to say, at a very high level, the question, we asked about the question of whether we can detect deepfakes. I think the way I like to approach the question is, under a reasonable budget limit, can we detect that deepfake? Because, you know, if you give someone infinite amount of time, effort, computation resources, you can, for sure, somebody can make a deepfake, eliminate everything that is, you know, kind of artifacts, and nobody can tell that is a fake one, just based on that piece of media.
Right.
So I think, you know, there's a scope. There's a scope there. But let's say if we are talking about someone not spending much effort on that, there is an algorithm. They just throw training data at the algorithm and then create generated faces, voices, or, you know, videos of faces. Those are detectable with the current algorithms. And there are two main themes of detection. I mean, there are actually third theme. I would say the first one, it's the easy one, is cross-sourcing. Because you see a single face, someone you know say something that is kind of like unexpected. I mean, this is no-tech way. You go online, you pick up the phone, ask that right person, you know, within a matter of seconds, you debunk the fake. But if we say we just limit to the media itself, we do not go for other contexts, there are still ways to do that. First of all those models, even though they look like very powerful, they create very realistic, say, human faces. They're not, they do not understand the world. As I mentioned in the previous episode we have, the way those models learn about, you know, doing certain tasks is by taking a large amount of data and figure out what are in the data. But the data, you know, piling up data is a very inefficient way of teaching a model about the world. For instance, something very simple, I take a simple example. We are doing this interview right now, right? Mm-hmm. So you are looking at me, I'm looking at you. We're both real people. And if you look into my eyes, you can see that, you know, there is a light in my room. You can see the reflections of the two lights on my, you know, in my two eyes. And because I'm a real person, I'm looking at the screen, my two eyes are roughly looking at the same thing. So the two reflections should be the same. That's just a simple fact from the physical world, from the, you know, the laws of the physics and geometry. But if you look at some of the AI generated faces, you look into the eyes, the reflections are different. So one eye almost like, it's like one eye looking at one thing, the other eye look at the different thing. And that's simply not possible. And this is the thing, like, you know, the models are knowing all the subtleties of facial skins and facial hair, but cannot make that little physical right. fact right. I call it the Achilles heel of the Achilles heels for the generative AI models. And right. this is the reason we can detect them. I mean, human, by just eyeballing all those images, we can find a lot of those artifacts. The other, my favorite example are teeth. Computer, right. the algorithms do not generate very well, you know, very good teeth. Especially in videos. Yeah, sometimes they're missing, sometimes they're inconsistent. So looking for those. But our goal is not just like, you know, humans looking at that. We developing algorithm based on this intuition. For instance, we have an algorithm based on the intuition I just mentioned, comparing the reflections of eyes and tell us how likely this is a deep fake. So that's one method. The other method is fundamentally those images are created from a different source, different path, right? Like the image you're looking at me is really created by the camera taking my presence, record this time and space, and save it as a form of image. Well, all those images created by algorithms, they come from a different world, not in this physical world. So statistically, they look very differently. So if we have the right way to look at the algorithm, I make the analogy like the X-ray. So if we want to see through human body, we want to understand if there's anything wrong inside the body, you know, just by looking at the body, we cannot get any of those information. But if we change the way we're probing the image, we can see a lot more information otherwise we couldn't see. So it's the same idea. We developed algorithms, almost like you can think about this as analogy of X-rays to human body. We look at the signals from a different perspective. And many of the artifacts otherwise will not be visible to us can now become become visible. And then comparing that, we can see, yeah, this has come from a different source than a camera. So these are algorithms we're developing. We already have a tool, and this tool is supported by the National Science Foundation and DARPA, which is the research branch of DOD. And it actually worked pretty reliably. I will say for anything that flashy out of the model, we have, you know, very good chance of catching that. Yeah.
Right. So one question I have, Sway, is what is there any beneficial use to this technology? For example, you know, the automobile causes, you know, tens of thousands of deaths every year, but there's a salutary purpose to the automobile.
Yes.
The same can be said for whole sorts of things. How did the deepfake technology arise? And it was it solely for the purpose of nefarious or criminal activity? Or was there some, what was the beneficial purpose and how did it,
That's a good question. That's why, you know, when I actually give talks, I don't like to use the word deepfake, or I only mention it because when we say deepfake, it looks like it carries this negative feeling. This technology, I call them generative AI technology. They're abundant beneficial use of it. I can give you a few examples. For instance, for movie industry and advertisement, you don't need the actor to be there. I mean, that just think about how much cost and, you know, effort that will save for us. And let alone, you know, if we talk about an actor, actress who are no longer live, right?
Jennifer Garner, right?
Exactly. Like there's a new episode of Star Wars. We have the Princess Leia and present in her, you know, in her younger age.
That's a better example than mine.
Yeah. But movie and entertainment industry is one thing. I think there are also really beneficial use of deepfakes. My favorite example is a Canadian company doing this audio deepfakes. So, you know, we have stroke patients. After a stroke, their language ability got affected, and they cannot really articulate their words as they used to be. And that caused a lot of stress on their caregivers, their family, you know, their children, because they simply cannot express themselves well. So there is a Canadian company developed this algorithm based on almost exactly the same technology behind the deepfake audio, is to learn their current articulation voice patterns and normalize their sound, their voices as they were normal. And this is based on AI algorithm, and you can imagine how much a benefit, how much stress that can reduce from the caregivers. So I think there are definitely good use of those technology, and that's why, you know, we cannot just kill the technology for the bad side of it. Yeah.
So there are, and we've got a little bit of time left. So there are benefits and there are risks to the use of this generative technology.
Mm.
Where do you see it going? How do you see it playing out over the next few years? Because I can imagine when we talk about deepfakes, I'm thinking of the scenario you mentioned. I'm thinking, you know, Volodymyr Zelensky's telling people to lay down arms, or someone fakes a president declaring, or not president, the president announcing a nuclear attack on a nation in order to induce a third world war. How will this play out, do you think, as you sit here today?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. We need to realize that this is a fastly developing field. So everything is very dynamic. There are two particular aspects of this dynamic nature that, you know, we need to pay attention to. Number one is we need to think about the human users. Humans are very versatile. So deepfakes, maybe this is not a very good analogy, but I can compare it with the virus, like COVID-19. So the first round of deepfakes, you know, struck a few people who are unaware of it. Mm-hmm. But as we see more and more of them, we start to develop some immune our immune system will get better. We start to find a way to tell real from fake. Our ability of telling real from fake will also develop. So eventually I think the humans will figure out, the users will figure out a way, of course, with the help of researchers, government and media, we'll figure out a way to, you know, better, to have a better ability to discern what are deepfakes and what are real. The other side is, but the other side of this dynamic competition is, you know, we work in the media forensics area. We try to expose deepfakes. There's a competition between us and those people who are making deepfakes. And that's just a reality. You know, the algorithm I developed today may be effective for the deepfakes now. There'll be people taking, you know, they read my paper, they understand what we're doing, they can fix their algorithm, make them, you know, even more powerful. So I think one thing is, number one, as a researcher, it's my responsibility to continue, you know, catching, you're keeping up the pace and developing more and more effective detection algorithms. But on the other hand, I think the public, the government need to pay you put a lot more attention, pay a lot more attention to this countermeasures, because just compared to the resources we get and those people who, you know, making generative AI models, is a huge imbalance war. If we talk about in terms of investment and money, we're on a losing side. And it's this huge gap between, you know, the investment there. So I think, you know, increasing the awareness of the general public, increasing investment into the countermeasure research area, those are the two most effective ways. On the other hand, I think government regulation could also play a role, but not in the way of, you know, banning the technology behind this, or, you know, stipulating, say, you know, you can do certain things, you cannot do that. I think the government can, what a government can do is make sure that all the media created, the two providers, say OpenAI for ChatGPT, or, you know, Stable Diffusion for their Midjourney, to put a watermark on their tools. So anything come out of their tools will have a clear indication to the viewer that these are not real. These are created by model. The same way as, you know, we watch a movie, it will say based on a real story, but not a real story. We should do that at least, you know, to make sure that everybody is aware of that. Yeah, that'll be my answer to this. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that, Sway. There's a lot to talk about here, but we have to leave it there for now. But I want to have you come back and talk more sometime about deepfakes, sure. And particularly how we can spot them and we can enact rules that may make it more difficult for the threat actors to confuse us into fraud and identity theft and other harms. But
absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Yes.
Professor Sway Liu of the State University of New York at Buffalo, Professor of Computer Science and Engineering. Our thanks to him and our thanks to you for joining us for this episode. We'll be back soon with another one.
The CyberSIP podcast is available on BarclayDamon.com, YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Like, follow, share, and continue to listen.